The Battle of Berlin, the bombing of the big city, as it was known, to the crews of RAF Bomber Command raged from November 1943 to the end of the war in Europe in 1945. In a new book, Martin Bowman recalls both the battle by both those in the air over the capital of the Third Reich, as well as those who suffered on the ground. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from the UK, author of Battle of Berlin, Bomber Command over the Third Reich, Martin Bowman. Martin, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. So, set the scene, if you... I mean, we now all know about the Blitz, and we all know about what went on there, but and pretty much as well about the land campaign and taking of Berlin, but surprisingly little is known about what happened in the skies above the German capital.
Well, first of all, my book is not a history book, and I think readers, they always want stories, not facts. The facts are there. I've put them in, of course, and you can find the facts here, there, and everywhere these days. There's about 255,000 words, and much of it is first-person quotations from the participants, not only in the air, but also on the ground. And they include even people, I think I've got a Russian emigre. She kept a diary, and it's a fantastically written diary. And it tells you what was going on in Berlin all the way through the bombing. And it's on a par with the Blitz of London.
I mean, presumably it was the campaign was put together by Bomber Harris, I would imagine.
No, it wasn't.
Okay,
no.
Well, put me right then.
There's a lot of misconceptions about all these sorts of things. First of all, he was taking his orders from the Chief of Air Staff, Lord Portal. But he was the instrument. He was the one who decided which targets to bomb, on which nights, how many aircraft, etc., etc. But he was actually in tune with the way the country was thinking, the government and the chiefs of air staff. They thought that if they knocked out Berlin, they could actually win the war. Didn't turn out that way.
And what was the... What was the plan then? I mean, presumably this was an Allied effort. So 1943, it would be involving the United States Air Force as well. I mean, talk me through how the original or the first.
Well, the plans, like all plans, especially in wartime, they change from day to day, month to month, year to year, and that's exactly what happened with Berlin. It all started really with the Germans bombing London in 24th of August 1940. The next night, Churchill ordered that the RAF Bomber Command must go and bomb Berlin. Well, in that period, we only had twin-engine bombers. The Stirling, I think, was just about coming into service then, the first four-engine bomber, but that really wasn't up to scratch. The first raid on Berlin was by the French, and the idea, ultimately, in the middle of the war, was that RAF Bomber Command would join forces with 8th Air Force and 15th Air Force down in Italy and do a combined bomber offensive on Berlin. But that never happened for several reasons. One is, of course, they flew in daylight. We flew at night. So it meant that we would have to fly in daylight. But to do that, you need escorts, and there weren't enough escorts. So the Americans were not prepared for a combined offensive. And their whole rationale was precision bombing. Actually, the RAF Bomber Command was area bombing, but strangely enough, we were more accurate with precision bombing as part of the area bombing than they were with their precision bombing. But, it changed quite a lot. We tried all sorts of things, and, of course, things like the weather are a factor. Electronic navigation and bombing aids are another factor. The whole strategy changed from possibly month to month, I would say.
Mm. And of course, the other thing was the fact that you mentioned about twin engine and four engine bombers. But, you know, Berlin was, the round trip was 1,200 miles. It wasn't just a case of literally sort of flying over, say, to Eindhoven or something. Berlin was a considerable distance away from the British airstrips.
It was. And unfortunately, the aircraft we had in the first two or three years of the war, they really weren't up to it. The crews were very brave, very determined, but if you haven't got the right equipment, it's not really very favourable all around. Gradually, we got the Lancaster in 1942, but I think in about 1942, we only had about 70 to 80 Lancasters. It was only, there was no race flown against Berlin in 42. We flew about 30 ops to Berlin in 1940, 17 in 1941. And then, of course, it gained momentum. And the Lancasters came on stream. And the navigational and bombing aids got better and better. But, of course, the Germans at the same time got better and better. Their Nachtjagd, their night fighter force, was absolutely a formidable foe. They really ran rampant on lots and lots of raids. Nuremberg in March 1944, we lost over 100 bombers that night. We did a raid on Leipzig around about the same time. We lost another 78 bombers. And the Berlin raids, well, you can read the figures wherever you care to look, and they're horrendous. And the casualties in Berlin were horrendous.
Talking about the casualties in Berlin, the described as the RAF cruiser as the big city, but Berlin itself had, as opposed to London, which was perhaps unprepared for the Blitz, Berlin had a formidable air defence system, and also
it certainly did.
And also public shelters.
Yes, they did prepare quite well. Actually, one of the things that attracted me to doing a book on the Battle of Berlin was the fact that they had these massive great flak towers. They had about five, I think, around Berlin. I've actually visited the only one still standing, well, the only half of it left. The French tried to blow it up in 1946-47, and they didn't even dent it. We destroyed the one at the zoo, at the Berlin Zoo. We did actually manage to destroy that one with hundreds and hundreds of tons of TNT. But I, you know, you get a lot of preconceived ideas about these sort of things when you write books and research, and then when you get a bit more deeper into it, you find out things are not quite what you thought. I always thought that the, because the zoo got hit, they killed nearly all the animals. There's a very graphic photo of a poor old elephant in the zoo there, black as charcoal, and of course that upset a lot of people. And I thought, well, they must have been stray bombs that hit it. But no, we actually targeted the zoo. And the reason we targeted the zoo is because in the Tiergarten, which adjoins the zoo, there was a flak tower, which is about the size of Norwich Castle. And also there was a smaller flak tower there with all the radar apparatus on it. They didn't put the radar on the actual flak tower because every time they would have fired the guns, it would have disturbed the reception of the radar. And this actually was the hub of the whole defence system in Berlin. So we deliberately went and bombed the zoo. Now, that's not really that well known.
Right.
I only found this out when I was doing research. But you find an awful lot of things out that are not so, you know. I think, what was his name? Ford, the American director who did a lot of John Wayne films. He said, when the legend becomes fact, print the legend.
And, I mean, what was the effect of the bombing on the Berliners' morale? And, you know, we're all familiar with the evacuations out of London to the countryside. Did a sort of similar thing happen in Berlin?
Yes, they did. They evacuated all the children. And then I think they came back again later on. And then, yeah, they were mainly evacuated. But the poor people in Berlin, they really suffered terribly, really did. But this is war.
So when you go to writing something like this about the Battle of Berlin, I mean, you talked about, you know, stories and diaries and first-hand accounts. I mean, it's such a, you know, it's such a huge city. It's such a varied city as well. I mean, how did you get everything down to a narrative, if you like?
It took about 3 years just to sort the narrative out. That's on top of the actual research, which is an ongoing thing. I don't just do one book at a time. I'm probably working on several at one time, probably 3 to 5 books. not simultaneously, but, you know, off and on. And one begets the next one. Because this book started out as three volumes. It then ended up as one volume for various reasons. And I had to delete all the American participation because there just wasn't room to put the Americans and the RAF in one big book. Fortunately, the Americans being daylight bombing, those particular chapters came out rather easily. It didn't affect the chronology. I referred to it, but I took them all out. I then put them into another book called The Men Who Flew the Heavy Bombers, which is not published yet. And the subject is so vast, I actually did a prequel, which is called The Blitz on Berlin, which covers the raids on Berlin from 1940 right up until late 43. That is a separate book. And because of the situation we've got at the moment with the pandemic, etc., this book has come out first, and the other one will probably come out later.
And so
I specialise in doing, I put as many first-person stories in as I can, because that's what people want to read, that's what I want to read. I want to read what it was like for these people in the air and on the ground, and the more the merrier in that respect.
And so, I mean, was it a case of going through, you know, official? I mean, how did you actually find out these documents then, or these?
Oh, I could be here all day telling you how I did it. But basically, it's 40 years research has gone into this. That's how long I've been writing books. And there's a very famous author called Martin Middlebrook who did a superb book on raids on targets in World War II. He's done several. He's done the Nuremberg raid and the Berlin raids, etc. And when he did those books, you're talking probably, 30 years ago? Well, there was no internet, but he had access to all the newspapers. And you'd put a letter in the newspaper, and you'd probably get about 1,000 replies if it was a London newspaper, or several London types of London newspapers. You would get, and of course the veterans then were still alive. They're not anymore,
right?
Unfortunately. So I've had to build up a network over the years where I sort of plague the life out of people. Normally they're very forthcoming. Relatives are very good. They want to see their father, their uncle, their brother, whatever. They want to see him in print. They mustn't be forgotten. And one of the ways of doing that, is to put them in a book like this. But I have a credo, which is very simple. It's called ABC. And it's the easiest way to write a book. It's assume nothing, believe no one, check everything.
That'll do it.
Because I've got a chap who was a mosquito pilot, and he flew on the raid on Potsdam right at the end of the war, which actually I've included in this book because it was in the Berlin Defence Zone. Why the heck we were bombing Potsdam at that time is anyone's guess. It wasn't a military target as such. I think we killed about 5,000 people in about 17 minutes. And he saw a couple of planes going down, and he assumed that they were Lancasters. I found out through a heck of a lot of legwork, which I enjoy. That's the best bit of these books, is the doing the detective work. I enjoy that more than anything. He thought they were Lancasters. I found out one was a German night fighter that collided with the Lancaster, but there was nothing mentioned about it in the records because, of course, he never got back. There was another one where I had a story from POW in Berlin, a British POW. He actually saw another Lancaster on fire, and he assumed that that went down, and they were all killed. In fact, what happened, I don't know how I found out, but I did eventually, that the pilot told the crew to bail out, and he flew all the way to Holland and crash-landed in Holland. Now, if you crash-land in Holland and you don't get back to England, that is not a loss. Again, people think that the figures are for aircraft that were lost. Well, if they're missing in action, yes, they are lost. If we know where they crashed, either in Germany, Holland, Belgium, or the sea, or back in England on landing, that is not a loss. So a lot of the figures you see, like the Nuremberg raid, for instance, I think they always say there was about 96 lost. They didn't want to use the figure 100 if they could.
Right.
But I found out the actual losses were far more than that because a lot crashed in England, which are not recorded as losses. Some crashed in the sea. You know, it's a quagmire to go through sometimes.
So, I mean, at the big, before the start of the Battle of Berlin, Arthur Harris said that it would cost between 400 to 500 aircraft. Have you got any idea? Can you make a guesstimate then about how many were lost in this campaign?
Well, I do know the figures. I have got access to the figures, and again, you'll find these everywhere. I can't remember offhand how many now, but the losses were bad. As I say, one or two raids, they lost probably 50, 60 on a raid. I think the total was, well, I could tell you the total if I had more time, but the losses were horrendous. But it didn't stop the offensive, because Harris was convinced that by knocking out Berlin, he could actually win the war on his own. Goering had the same idea in the Battle of Britain. I should have told him something. Mm. But we persevered, bombing it sometimes night after night, year after year. The Americans, he hoped, would come in with us, but for the reasons we've already mentioned, they didn't. When they did come in, they came in finally in March 1944, and General Doolittle, who was the chief of 8th Air Force in England at the time, he did not want to be associated with area bombing of Berlin. So what he said was that we're going to do precision bombing of Berlin. So they picked on the railway stations in Berlin. They didn't hit any of them, unfortunately, but they killed an awful lot of civilians. And the Americans were putting up something like 1,000-odd bombers and 1,000-odd fighters. But, of course, this didn't come in until late in the war. And then you've got the onset of the campaign to put the invasion forces on D-Day into France.
Right.
So Harris was then finally ordered, if you like, to cease and take part in the bombing campaign in the Low Countries, in France particularly, in the run-up to D-Day. But even then, he dragged his feet a little bit. It took him about a month or two before he actually started bombing targets that did affect the outcome of D-Day, the build-up to D-Day. He was still convinced, I think, that he could still win the war with the Bomber Command, but history has shown you can't.
What do you hope that people will take from your book, The Battle of Berlin?
I hope they will enjoy reading it for a start. I also hope they will take away with them the memories which are in the stories, in the chapters, and spare a thought for the Berliners, because we always hear about London and Malta and places like that being bombed, and the horrendous losses we suffered, and that's all been pretty well covered. You don't hear too much about what went on in Berlin. The Russian emigre that I mentioned, she actually was quite well-to-do. She'd moved to Berlin after the Russian Revolution. The whole family went. Apparently quite a lot of Russians did that. And she was in Potsdam, which is just to the southwest of Berlin. And she was on her way back to the capital. And she left it late. She was deliberately leaving it late because she knew that the RAF usually came over about 7 o'clock in the evening. So she delayed her trip back so she could get into Berlin after the bombers had left. But she got in to the outskirts, and then all the trains were all holed up. They were all parked outside of the city because there was a bombing raid in progress. And, of course, she never knew why that was so. Well, I know, because I had a story from an RAF pilot who described his takeoff that night and the bombing of the city. And he said that they were late leaving that night because of the weather. So we actually went off about another hour and a half late. So, of course, the bombing was late, and she was then caught in the bombing. And it's nice that you can actually do this with research, where at the time they weren't aware of the actual details.
The book is called The Battle of Berlin, Bomber Command Over the Third Reich, 1943 to 1945. It's by Martin Bowman. Martin, if people want to find out more about you, can they find you on the web? I mean, is there a website to find you on?
I haven't got my own website. I haven't got the time. But there's plenty of websites out there. They seem to put all my books on the internet.
Indeed.
Which is okay, but I'd rather they didn't. But I find quite a few stories on the internet as well, and then you get in touch with people. That's another way of doing it. You can't do newspapers anymore because the veterans, as I say, they've all gone. So unless they've actually, A, written it down before or while they were still with us, or B, the relatives have got their logbooks and details and things, you are flying blind a lot of the time. But it's surprising how many stories you can get hold of. I get them from all over the place. Again, it's the investigative side that I enjoy. I go around all the second-hand bookshops, and you find some of these books published in 1945, 46 onwards. They're in there for 50p each. And I think if the authors knew it, they'd turn in their graves. But they're a rich source of information. But, of course, they were written at a time and published at a time when secrecy was still in force and they weren't privy to all the information that was available, or not available for them anyway. So what I have to do is I have to add to their stories with some facts. And sometimes you have to actually correct things because their memories being what they are, you don't always remember everything correctly, of course. Mm. So it's not just a case of getting a load of stories and putting them on paper. You have to work at it. But that's the best bit. And hopefully that comes through in the book. I think if you see the... I was very grateful to another author who appears on TV quite a lot, James Holland. And I sent him the manuscript when I'd finished it, and I said to him, James, do us a favour, just have a read of this and tell me what you think. And he really came out with a glowing reference for me on the back cover. It's now on the back cover. And what he said was about my empathy with the subject, which is quite incredible, really, because I was born in 1952.
Well, I've interviewed James before about his stuff about the Western...
I've been lucky. I've flown in the Lancaster four times. I've been catapulted off aircraft carriers in the Mediterranean with the Americans. I've flown in the B-52, and I don't think any British author or civilian has done that. And I'm very proud of that. And I think you have to do that if you're writing books, because it's the only way that you can hopefully try and put yourself in their position, put yourself in their place. And, of course, the trouble is, though, that you fly into... I've flown into a couple of war zones, and you sit there doing the story, taking notes and taking photographs, because I do a lot of photography, which is my other string to the bow. And you suddenly think, well, that's okay. You know, I'm a fly on the wall, so if we get shot down, I'll be okay. But, of course, if you get shot down, the fly on the wall gets killed as well.
Indeed. This book is called The Battle of Berlin. Hopefully you'll be flying for a while to come. Battle of Berlin, a bomber command over the Third Reich. It's by Martin Bowman. Martin, it's been a pleasure to speak to you today.
The pleasure's all mine. Thanks very much, Jeff.